Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Deep left into the bleachers, a two-run homer.
A swing and a miss, ball game.
Liftoff.
And history marches on, 22 consecutive wins.
From the sports desk of the Akron Beacon Journal and Ohio.com, this is Leading Off with Ryan Lewis, a podcast on Cleveland baseball.
Santana makes the catch! Ball game! The Indians have won the American League pennant!
The Cleveland Indians are going to the World Series!
Now, Ryan Lewis and Ashley Bastock.
Welcome to Leading Off, a podcast on Cleveland baseball. I'm Ashley Bastock, here with our beat writer at the Akron Beacon Journal, Ryan Lewis. We are back after a week off, Ryan. What did you do in the last, 2 weeks?
We finished The White Lotus.
Oh, yeah, me too. That show was great.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. The music was such a cool element, and we were reading that it's made to make the viewer feel like kind of on edge or uneasy, which is a really cool element. That was a fun show.
You read the Mike White profile then, basically.
Parts of it, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I need to read it still, but one of my other favorite podcasts, which is called Still Watching, which is done by a couple of Vanity Fair writers, and they talk about phenomenal television shows. They did a quick wrap up of this series because they're on a little break right now, but they were like, it's too good not to talk about. And my favorite question that was posed in it is putting a journalist in your show a good way to get journalists talking about your show on Twitter? Because the only thing I tweeted about White Lotus, and this is not a spoiler alert, as you all know, we are a spoiler free podcast, is that Rachel is a terrible journalist.
Yeah, and my wife, who is a huge Gilmore Girls fan, and she turned me into a fan of that show, because that is a fantastic show. But she was quick to notice the Rory Gilmore mention.
Yeah. I mean, they are definitely, I think, the two worst fake fictionalized journalists that television has given us. But anyways, it's I just got back personally from a brief vacation for one of my friends who's getting married. So glad to be back and getting settled in. But we are actually recording this a day earlier than we normally record this, because if you watched the game on Wednesday, it started early and it was a game that was a very long game because Ryan and I were texting throughout it. It was obviously over 3 hours long, and I'm convinced that I cursed it because I asked you, do you just want to record this on Wednesday evening so we don't have to both get up early on Thursday when we just, can't stand to do that anyways?
Plus we had a time crunch. We don't have, we have, plans tonight. You have something to cover.
Yeah.
So from a work standpoint, there was a window to where this could be recorded. And as soon as it went into extras, that was put into quick jeopardy. But Cleveland failed to get in the free runner from second base. I'm not even sure if that's the right term for the free runner that teams get. I know some people didn't like the term ghost runner. But
I kind of love the term ghost runner.
I did too, but I guess technically with how it used to be used, it isn't applicable. I don't know. That's the end of the debate scale for baseball. But Cleveland did not get that runner home in the 10th. Nick Wickren, with the help of a tremendous catch from Miles Straw in center field, which is a huge reason why Cleveland was so intent on acquiring Miles Straw for so long, made a great play to extend the game. Cleveland's offense, again, did not score in the 11th, and Justin Garza was not able to hold the Twins at bay for a second inning, or at least the bullpen wasn't able to hold them for a second inning. So that's, another loss where, again, the Twins kicked the ball around this series. So for, for Cleveland to not take the series, considering where they are in the standings and that they're still on the fringe of playoff contention, but, that fringe status is, it's starting to slip a little bit with who they're trailing, both in the division and for a wild card. So a tough series that ended today with that extra innings loss.
So I obviously have not read your walk-off thoughts yet because they are not up, but give the people a little preview. And I guess by the time this podcast is up, they will be up and they can go right from listening here to reading those. So give me a little preview of what's going to be in those on Thursday, August 19th.
So yesterday for this morning, for Wednesday morning, kind of took a look at starting rotation's evolution and, you know, where it stands moving forward. And we'll be doing something similar for the outfield heading into next year to where center field, again, as I just mentioned, Cleveland was intent on, you know, for roughly a year or so, to acquire Miles Straw to kind of solve center field, which the list of guys who have at least played some, you know, games in center for Cleveland over the last 5 or 6 years is really lengthy. But the corner spots are still an extremely murky situation. There are some issues with, you know, first a 40-man issue with the Rule 5, which could play, you know, into the major league side of things with how Cleveland wants to handle the Rule 5 draft. And then there are issues with guys being out of options next year. So there are a lot of tough decisions that Cleveland is going to have to make. And a few of them are in the outfield. So we're going to kind of tackle that for Thursday morning.
Well, while we were gone, Tristan McKenzie flirted with greatness during Cleveland's 11-0 win over the Tigers on Sunday, which, fun story, my flight was on Sunday, my flight home. It was about like 2 hours and I'm taking off and it's in the, I want to say, third or fourth inning. And I'm starting to see the tweets and obviously the ways that sports reporters say that somebody is having a no-hitter or a perfect game as it's happening without using the words. It's actually pretty great. Like, pay attention to that next time one's going on. And then I landed and saw, I'm like, oh my gosh, he stayed perfect into the eighth inning before it got broken up. So like we said, he's perfect through seven innings. The Tigers didn't have a base runner all day. And obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably know that the last Cleveland baseball no-hitter was also a perfect game thrown by Len Barker in 1981. And with two outs in the eighth inning, Harold Castro was the one who broke that up with a single into right field. And he was Tristan McKenzie four outs away from, you wrote, making 40 years worth of Cleveland histories. But I want to talk about, you gave a different look at this perfect game bid, though, which was what made it so especially unique, in that McKenzie was a chatterbox for basically the entirety of that start.
Yeah. I mean, he's a kid in his early 20s and enjoying the game of baseball. And you know, that wasn't really going to change just because he had a perfect game going on. DeMarlo Hale noted that, you know, Tristan McKenzie was still cheering on Cleveland's hitters, when they were batting. And, probably the funnier part was, Austin Hedges, who caught that game in between innings. Tristan was wanting to talk to Austin Hedges, you know, about the hitters that were coming up or the previous inning. And Austin Hedges, I think, was in a situation where he's like, I don't know what to do right now. Like, if the pitcher's talking directly to you, can you address him? Because that's such a no-no in baseball when a pitcher has a no-no bid going or a perfect game bid going. You do not acknowledge him. You do not say anything. All that normally happens is that pitcher goes to the dugout. He sits on the bench. He'll put his pitching arm into a jacket to keep it warm, and that's it. No talking, no acknowledgement. It's like Fight Club. You don't mention Fight Club. You don't talk about Fight Club. You don't talk to the pitcher during a perfect game. But if the pitcher is the one who's talking and he's asking you questions, then you have to address him. So kind of just put Austin Hedges in this, I guess, in the baseball world, a comically awkward situation where if Tristan wants to talk, I guess it's okay to talk to him. But yeah, he wasn't going to change. He was just enjoying his, you know, what has been a tremendous stretch over his last really three starts, but really going forward, going back, even further than that. You know, there have been some clunkier outings, but you know, for a while, he's definitely turned, well, it's turning a corner is a difficult, you know, phrase in baseball because things are always adjusting, but, you know, he's really, adjusted well from his earlier command issues. And over the last six or seven starts, but really, especially over the last three, he's really limited that. I think he has one walk in his last three starts. And taking a perfect game into the eighth inning, and coming four outs away is his best start at the major league level. So he's, you know, really found some momentum. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why we kind of wrote, walk-off thoughts a few days ago about how he and Kyle Quantrill have really, separated themselves a little bit from the rest of the group.
And this is a fairly easy transition for us to make because you already brought up this story about the starting rotation outlook and the kind of journey that that has gone through this year. So if you listen to this podcast, you know we've spent a lot of time talking about the injuries to the starting rotation and the mad scramble to remain in playoff contention with a pretty young roster trying to overcome some of those absences. So for the starting rotation, again, a topic we have talked about a lot is balancing younger pitchers, developing at the major league level, and trying to make adjustments on the fly to stay relevant in a playoff race. So while Cal Quantrill and Tristan McKenzie were kind of the early favorites to fill those last two rotation spots, they both struggled early, but now in the back half of the year, you wrote about how they kind of have separated themselves from some of these other younger pitchers that have made starts this year.
Yeah, and it's possible things could change over the last 6 or 7 weeks of the season. It's possible things could change next spring. But yeah, I mean, there was a point earlier in the season when Tristan McKenzie was really struggling with his command and eventually sent to AAA Columbus, and Kyle Quantrill was relegated to the bullpen. And not he had a rough spring. It's not because of his stat line. It's because he just wasn't throwing the ball well this spring, and he clearly couldn't, be thrown into a rotation spot, especially with, Tristan McKenzie looking okay going into opening day and Logan Allen just, tearing the Cactus League up all spring. He had to be given a shot. And then there was a time, like a month or two ago where Cal Quantrill was just joining the rotation, but still being stretched out and still really only throwing a few innings each outing. And Tristan McKenzie wasn't able to get out of the first inning, in early June and was sent back down again. There was a reason that, Cleveland, when they sent Tristan McKenzie down that second time, around earlier mid-June, they were really intent on staying away from him to allow him enough time to completely reset himself. Cause there was clearly a command issue that had continued to kind of snowball on him in certain outings, and they really wanted to stay away from him. So even when another need arose, they chose to call up Logan Allen that time. Even though, Allen was just coming off an injury. But they were really intent on allowing McKenzie to have some, additional time to completely reset. And it's paying dividends now, to where he looks like a different pitcher, than he did a few weeks ago. And Cal Quantrill has been among the best pitchers in baseball since the All-Star break. He's been one of the better 5 or 10 starters in baseball since then. So those two guys have had quite the evolution during this 2021 season where, both guys struggled early on. Tristan McKenzie was in Columbus. Cal Quantrill wasn't throwing out a whole lot in the bullpen. And now both, are clearly in the driver's seats, for the number 4 and 5 spots. Once Bieber, Savali, and Plesac are healthy, of course, it's either looking forward to, late September, maybe mid September or, 2022, whenever that does happen. But, Quantrill, McKenzie are, clearly the favorites right now ahead of Logan Allen, Eli Morgan, JC Mejia, Sam Henches, and then, anybody else that may climb into that mix, moving forward. But right now, in terms of a future outlook, there's a pretty clear top five at the moment, which hasn't been the case for quite some time.
Yeah, for me, it felt like the Tristan McKenzie just like looked and sounded different in that July 9th win over the Royals, which was the Bobby Bradley walk-off game. And that was when I think at the time it was a career best 7 innings pitched for him in that start. And he just looked so calm and focused. And there was a point in that game in like the second or third inning where things could spiral. And he was like, nope, I knew I made competitive pitches and I just kept my head in it. And I really feel like ever since that point in each of these starts he's made, it's been pretty consistent with all of that.
Yeah. And it for Tristan McKenzie to really trust that his stuff can work in the zone, meaning he doesn't need to try to paint the corner every single time. And that's something that, Cleveland's coaching staff, pitching coach Carr Willis, that's something that they've worked with him all summer. And it really just took time to where some guys, just feel like they maybe have to be perfect, as a younger starter. And that isn't always the case. And it took time for Tristan McKenzie to have that trust in his own stuff that he can throw it in the zone and, just movement, velocity, pitch sequencing, attacking hitters, setting hitters up. He's at a point where he can allow his stuff to play in the zone without always having to, try to worry about getting guys to chase too much, where there is a balance sometimes when you're ahead in the count of not wanting to give somebody anything to hit, but also not wanting to, you know, try to be so careful and so fine that you eventually, you know, even out those counts, and you sort of lose that leverage that you had. So that was another form of evolution that Tristan McKenzie has gone under. And again, these are both still younger pitchers. They're all for the most part younger pitchers and isn't a ton of track record there. So, you know, there's a lot of continued development. We talked with general manager Mike Chernoff this morning, and he kind of mentioned that it's not, it's not just about evaluation over these last 5, 6, 7 weeks of the regular season. It's also about continued development, and that there's an understanding where, you know, it's not necessarily just like a tryout situation. And for different spots around the roster, it's also about development. You know, there are a lot of fluid, you know, situations because it's such a young roster, and you know, guys are developing on the fly at the major league level to such a significant extent around the roster that it's not just, you know, evaluating guys and making decisions like that. It's also about development and, you know, trying to foresee what's coming down the road. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why, again, they'll be facing a lot of difficult decisions around the roster, both ahead of the Rule 5 draft and then again on opening day.
Well, if you are a regular listener to this podcast, and quite honestly, even if you made it through the first 5 minutes of this podcast, you probably know that Ryan and I are big pop culture fans. And sometimes our interests of baseball and pop culture overlapped, like in our baseball movies draft that we did. And in that draft, obviously, I took Field of Dreams first because I did not want to be fired. And Ryan and I later executed a trade because he stole my favorite movie, which is A League of Their Own, but it's fine. But anyways, there's a point to all of this, which is to say, let's talk the Field of Dreams game from last week. So MLB built a baseball field just across the cornfield from the movie set in Dyersville, Iowa. And the game itself between the White Sox and the Yankees was pretty bananas. All of the runs but one, I think, in that game were scored on home runs, including the White Sox walk-off two-run homer from Tim Anderson. I thought it was pretty cool to watch, obviously. I had to watch it after the fact because I was on vacation. I just watched it yesterday fully all the way through. But I, like, was emotional watching it, I guess. Like, what did you think about the night and the kind of spectacle that it was last week?
I thought it was extremely well done.
Yeah.
From a playing perspective, from a broadcast perspective, the aerial shots they had of both the stadium, the set, that's still there, the house and the fields, and I thought it was extremely well done. And then the game ended up being phenomenal on top of that.
The drone shot that they kept, I know they played it multiple times into and out of the breaks, but it was a drone shot, you know, from outside, and it goes into the main bedroom and throughout the farmhouse. It was just so, so cool.
It was expertly planned. It was executed really, really well. And yeah, the opening sequence with Kevin Costner coming out of the corn was incredible.
I got goosebumps just like talking about it.
Right. I mean, we both love that movie. It's my favorite movie of all time. I've probably seen it 10 or 12 times. Costner's fan. It was also fun to have Costner in the broadcast booth.
Yeah, that was
a fun perspective to have during the game. It was really, really, really well done.
I can't believe your favorite movie ever you've only seen 10 times. That seems way off.
I don't know. I guess
it's not really your favorite movie, and therefore the trade we executed back in the spring should be, I don't know, redone, done away with. Field of Dreams is now mine again. I'm the commissioner and a team in this draft all at once.
But I mean, like, they really captured, like, kind of the magic of that set and kind of the feel of movie, which is what makes it so great. Like James Earl Jones's speech near the end of the movie, things like that, they really captured all of that so well. Just like, it was just extremely well done by everyone who planned and executed the broadcast for that game.
Yeah, and there is a local connection to this game as well, because Medina native Dwyer Brown played John Kinsella in the movie, and he actually talked to our Jen Pignolet for a subscriber exclusive story that you can go check out at beaconjournal.com. And it just is a really well done story. I don't want to spoil it. I would just encourage everyone to go read it, because there is that cool local connection with obviously one of the most notable characters in the movie.
Yeah, really well done from Jen, who at some point may be joining this podcast for a West Wing podcast.
I think we could
very intent on crashing the podcast.
Well, I was going to say, I think we should just have her on and let her pick her top five baseball movies, because she had a lot to say during that draft, and I know we did not take her favorite one. So I think
I was almost nervous going into that draft that we were going to get yelled at.
I think we kind of did. She was essentially listening and live tweeting us like her thoughts in real time once the podcast dropped. So Jen, friend of the pod, our colleague, I think we should just invite her to come and pick her top five favorite baseball movies. She can kind of repick some of the ones that we picked and quite honestly might have better opinions than us.
Plus, we won't get vindictive when we draft each other's favorite movies and then have to steal them back.
That can be, okay, I'm calling it now. Let's do that as like a year-end pod. Once we're done with this, we'll invite Jen to come and talk about her favorite baseball movies, and we'll probably invite her to also talk about what it was like talking to Dwyer Brown, because I know she was very, very excited as a huge baseball fan and a fan of that movie to get to do that story. So we'll let her talk about her process a little bit. But all right, you know, we made it through after 1 week off, getting back into the swing of things, and nice short, quick and easy here, talking about some of the pitching situation. So, like we said, by the time you listen to this, Ryan's story on the outfield situation should be up already. You can check that out on beaconjournal.com under the Cleveland Guardians tab. Check out all of his work on Twitter. He's at @ByRyanLewis. I am at @AshleyBastock42. And until next week, we'll see ya.
Go the distance.